Hey, it's Steve and Dave again. We are two guys in a river. I'm Steve Mathewson.
And I'm Dave Getz.
No doubt we all want to catch more fish. I want to, and Dave needs to.
Ooh, that hurts.
But we're all about fly fishing and our love for the outdoors, so let's get after it. Summer was made for dry fly fishing. Sure, you can catch trout on dry flies in the spring and fall, and even in the winter at times on midge patterns, but summer is ideal. I mean, the hatches are in full bloom. Yeah, that's a mixed metaphor for sure, since insects aren't flowers, yeah. but hey, whatever. And the trout seem to be looking up since terrestrials start showing up, you know, those hoppers and beetles. So take a break from nymphing or stripping streamers and tie on a dry fly. One of the challenges, though, with dry fly fishing is knowing what pattern or patterns to use. Right, Dave?
It is for me, and the whole idea of matching the hatch is a great idea in theory. And certainly, if you're fishing and you're fishing green and there's a green drake hatch on, you definitely want a green drake pattern, right? But sometimes you don't know what's really going to be popping when you're fishing. So the options can be bewildering. Go into any fly shop and browse their selection online and be prepared to be overwhelmed. Here's one reason why it's overwhelming. In recent years, especially in the last 10 years, is that one of the fly fishing shops that we frequent in the Driftless, which is just this really wonderful fly fishing shop, but they have all these really cool names for their flies. So they'll have this BWO pattern that is kind of your standard BWO pattern with a, you know, with a parachute on it. But they call it something very unique. And so it's got this cool name. And so patterns have all these names now. And so the old traditional patterns, like it's a parachute Adams, or it's a pale morning dun, or, you know, it's a compara dun, or
right.
So now you've got these, you actually have to look at the fly and look at the color. And again, for somebody that is unsophisticated like me, you know, you have to take a double look. So
I know we ought to do an episode on that.
We should do one just on fun names on flies, right? And,
yeah.
You know, today's fly fishers who tie flies, they're just amazing. And they're just technicians of the ultimate technicians. And they are able to tie these beautiful flies. But they've also renamed a lot of them. So it just becomes a little bit confusing.
Yeah, I know. I was looking online, some of the funny names, you know, the black ghost, the greeny weenie, the cow dung, the Mickey Finn, the professor, yeah, the rat face McDougal. I mean, a fly formerly known as Prince. Yeah, probably something that looked like a Prince nymph, I suppose. So there's so many flies, but
let me give you some more. This is the fly fishing shop in the Driftless. Film Star, which is basically a BWO with a quasi parachute on it. It's not your traditional parachute, but the Clink Hammer, the Pearl Butt Secret, the Tilt Wing Dun, the Mini Hot Mayfly, which just really doesn't tell you whether you need to, you can use it for what, right? Because it's actually a dark fly. The Greased Lightning, the Missing Link is another one. So they're really well-built flies, well-designed flies, but you got to kind of dig in. So anyway, it is confusing.
Yep. So what we're going to do today, and this is just a huge public service for fly fishers. Yeah, we're going to try to simplify it for you. Really, there are four big categories of dry flies to think about. And you don't need a bazillion flies in each category. In fact, at the end of this podcast, we're each going to share our flies that we would take on a summer dry fly fishing trip if we were limited to three patterns, that
oh,
is,
man.
All right? So that's all we get, three flies.
That's all we get.
Yep. Which ones would you choose if you could only take three?
I think I'm going to screw this up because I really need like five or six.
Let's do three. Yes.
All right. So let's talk about the big categories of flies.
Yeah.
So the big one, first one, of course, is mayflies. And If you've fly fished for more than a day, you know that mayflies make up a large chunk of a trout's diet. And so let's start with blue-winged olives or little olives or BWOs, whatever. This may be one of the most important flies for Western rivers. So Dave Hughes, who an expert entomologist, in fact, I just watched a video of his the other day, says nice. That they hatch for several weeks and even months. And that's why even through the most prolific, even though most of the prolific hatches are in spring and fall, you'll see but BWOs during the summer too. Like, remember a couple years ago, it was in October, and there was suddenly this, it had been really cold like a couple weeks before, and then it got warm again, it got into the 50s, and the BWOs were popping. So yeah. They really do pop all year long.
They really do.
With the exception, of course, of winter.
Now, this is where terminology can get confusing, because BWOs are part of the genus, which is a category in taxonomy, known as betas. So you'll hear people refer to them as betas flies. And I'm not going to get into the taxonomic argument here, and frankly, I'm not interested in it. I just use BWO and
wait,
betas.
Wait. Taxonomic?
I think that's a word.
Yeah. Is that because of your PhD in linguistics? You're putting one over on me?
Yeah.
Taxonomic?
Probably I mispronounced it. It's probably something else, but... No, you hear people talk about the species, the genus, all these categories, and so I find it confusing, yeah. So I just use BWO and betas interchangeably. Probably some wouldn't do that, but I like to keep things simple. So, after that little terminology lesson, Dave, let's just talk about what are some good patterns for BWOs?
Yeah, so the parachute BWO, in fact, the one that I just mentioned that they use in the Driftless, the film star is a BWO pattern. You can get it in different colors, actually. So you can get the olive, you can actually get it lighter. We're going to talk about PMDs later. But so they have this standard fly that you can get in different colors. But or the Comparadon. So the parachute BWO or the Comparadon.
Mm-hmm.
The parachute Adams or purple haze, which is kind of the same thing, only with purple super floss dubbing. So the purple haze really mimics the parachute Adams with some color differentiation.
Yeah. Yep.
But those are hard to beat as a more general imitation. If you can get small enough, when there's a BWO hatch, in general, not always, but in general, I've been able to catch fish.
I agree. I think the size is more important than the exact pattern. I would suspect, at least in my experience, that if it's a BWO hatch, that the right size parachute Adams or purple haze is more important than having the wrong size BWO pattern, like a parachute BWO or a Comparadon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, something to keep in mind. Hey, another mayfly pattern that's really important during the summer would be the pale morning dun, which gets abbreviated as PMD. And this fly is found in the western part of the U.S., and as the name suggests, it has a pale appearance. The wings appear white and translucent. And you go to a fly shop and ask for any PMD pattern, but probably the most famous and perhaps the most effective, I think, is Craig Matthews' Sparkle Dun pattern. Craig Matthews, a longtime owner of Blue Ribbon Flies in West Yellowstone. And I had a great day a few years ago on the Owyhee River in eastern Oregon using size 18 PMD patterns. And in fact, I remember my son, we were kind of fishing back to back. We were standing in the middle of this small river because there were good runs up against the bank on either side. And we weren't catching anything. And my son said, "Hey, Dad, I think I saw one of those pale flies. What do you call them?" I said, "Oh, pale morning dun." And he goes, "Yeah, there goes one." And I turned around and looked. And sure enough, that there was a pale morning dun coming off the water. And we switched. And, man, we started catching some really nice trout.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, the PMD, you've got to have, you got to get you some of those, right?
Yes.
So, but there are other mayflies as well. There's the green drakes, the trichos, Trichos are so small.
Yeah, they really
are. You have to
are.
Fish like a 22 or 24. Yeah. I remember we were fishing 16 mile in Montana.
Yeah, or was it the East Gallatin?
No.
There were trichos there on the east.
But yeah. I remember the first fish, the first flies that got off that morning when we were on 16 mile with the trichos.
That's right.
And I remember thinking, I'm sorry. I'm not fishing. I'm not putting in anything that tiny. Because we were there to fish terrestrials. And about 9 or 10 o'clock, they actually started to pop. The terrestrials, we started catching them on hoppers and on spruce moss and stuff. But those trichos are so small. But, yeah, there's other mayflies. The Hendrickson is a really east and midwest fly. It's not really a summer fly, although you can catch, you know, they hatch into early June. And there's the March Browns, etc. But so we're not trying to make this complicated. So as always, check with your local fly shop to see which dry flies work best on a particular river. I know, like in the West, they have these big chalkboards. They'll tell you, you know, the flow of the river. If it's coming out of a dam, they'll talk about what's been popping. And so they know and they have the So I would just go to your local fly shop and ask.
Or a website if they update it. And there's some shops are really good at updating their websites. Others, I think they do it annually.
Yeah, totally. And we can name names, but we won't.
We won't do that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, mayflies, that's a huge category. And I agree, Dave. Check in with a local fly shop, you know, for what's particular to that area. Another major category is caddisflies. And I know that people tend to think of this as a spring fly due to the famed Mother's Day caddis hatch on the Yellowstone River. The truth is, though, that the caddisflies continue to hatch or technically emerge throughout the summer, and that's as true in the driftless region in the Midwest as it is in the Midwest. I mean, I remember a day around July 4th when my parents, years ago, when they lived on the couple hundred yards, maybe 150 yards from the Yellowstone River in Paradise Valley, south of Livingston in Montana, and we were sitting out in their backyard, and we finally went inside because it was late evening and the caddisflies were getting so thick, it's like you could hardly take a breath. And this is in July. So, yeah, don't overlook those. I think as far as patterns, I mean, the go-to is always the elk hair caddis. That's probably the most used pattern, and we love those.
Yeah, and there's some black caddis in the driftless, mostly in the springtime, though. So if you fish for the trout in the Midwest, you want, obviously, some black caddis.
Yeah, right.
So they have black bodies, but you can get it with the elk hair. You can get it with the elk hair caddis, but it has a black body. But you know, I was just thinking the other day, you and I were fishing a creek in southeastern Minnesota, and I remember you threw on, it was a caddis imitation, but it had like a foam body. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
and,
I do.
And you caught that really big brown that was against the bank.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was like the only pattern that was working that day.
Yeah, crazy, isn't it?
I think
it?
We only caught a couple fish, and I think you had one left, and I think you generously gave it to me. And I promptly lost it, right? But, yeah, so there's different, obviously, types of elk hair caddis. But that foam had that foam body with the elk hair caddis on the you know, elk hair on the top. That thing was really effective.
That was. Yeah, I should have looked that up to see what the name of that was. I think one of the coolest things that I did years ago was to tie some elk hair caddis flies from elk hair off the hide of a bull elk that I shot with a bow. And in fact, this was in the mountains overlooking the Yellowstone River. So like every other fly that I've tied, Dave, it was ugly, but they caught a lot of trout.
Yeah. So you've set the bar way too high for us now. You know, you have to shoot your own bull elk.
Yeah, that's right.
Then you
right.
have to tan it.
Yeah, that's right.
And then
right.
you have to preserve the hide. And then you have to take elk hair out of it. And then you have to tie your own flies and then catch it in the stream that is beneath the mountains where you shot the elk.
Man, that's right. Sounds more impressive than it was. I took borax, that 40 mule team borax, and used that to treat the hide. And then I pulled some elk hair off of it. And any good fly tire will tell you that no, you want elk hair hides that are probably probably they're commercially raised, or I don't know. There's certain parts of the hide that are better than the others, and I was a little bit cognizant of that. But at the end of the day, it's like, hey, I just want to tie some that I, yeah, from a hide of a bull elk that I shot with a bow. So that was kind of fun. Maybe the circle of life there or some
such blah blah blah
funny thing. Yeah,
I guess if you can tie an elk hair caddis that a fish will strike at, I guess that gives hope for everybody else.
Well, absolutely it does. Yeah, thanks for that dig, Dave, even though it's true. Yeah, bring me back down to earth here. But anyway, what we're saying is, yeah, mayflies and caddisflies, those are two huge categories of patterns that you want in your arsenal.
All right. What's the next category? The third really is terrestrials. And this is probably patently obvious. These usually show up later in the summer, August, September, although late July as well. So ants, beetles, grasshoppers. It's not so much that they show up. The grasshoppers do. The ants and the beetles are probably there, you know, year-round.
Yeah,
but
right.
The grasshoppers are starting to move, and they land on the water, and you really get some good days with terrestrials. The patterns, of course, are legion. We like the ones that are tied with foam because they tend not to get as waterlogged. They tend to be also a little bit more durable. I remember fishing the Yellowstone probably in September, maybe 3-4 years ago, and we were fishing what we call hopper run, and I was fishing, my top fly was a big elk hair caddis. You know, I was using that as an attractor, and they were hitting that just like they were the grasshoppers. And I dropped this beetle that was a foam beetle, and it was so fun because you could see the top fly, but then I dropped the fly probably 8 inches, but you could see it beneath the river, beneath the surface, because it was so clear, especially when it would drift closer to shore. And to watch those cutthroat come up and hit that beetle, it was so amazing. It was one of the great thrills of my life, watching that, right? Seeing it happen.
That's cool.
So terrestrials are that category. Yeah. You know, if you're fishing in the, you know, if you're fishing in the West especially, but really also in the Midwest and the East, you got to fish terrestrials.
And it's a good reminder what you just said, Dave, that you can use the smaller ones like ants especially. I always when I fish an ant, it's always as a dropper.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be my lead fly, although I have some ant patterns that are foam that are pretty good size, and I wouldn't mind using one of those, but it's like, man, if it's terrestrial season, I'll usually have, you know, a hopper on, or it could be an elk hair caddis and then drop an ant pattern. So the terrestrials can be used as droppers as well, and they're really effective, and they're fun, like you say. They're especially a big old hopper, man. When you see a fish, you know, come out of the lower regions to attack a hopper, that's a thrill, isn't it?
Yeah, it's joy. You know, I don't know if words personified. It's like one of the great moments of fly fishing.
Oh, it really is. Well, here's a final category, and that would be attractor patterns. And obviously, there's no entomological category known as attractor patterns. What these are patterns that are attractive, and we don't know what they imitate. I don't know if the trout do either, but they sure like them. So, you know, one very famous category would be some of the royal flies. Kind of started with a royal coachman. Used to fish with that when I first started. Now it's a royal wolf, because that royal wolf has the wings are kind of white calf hair, and so they're big and bushy. I mean, those royal, whether it's a royal coachman or royal trout or royal wolf, they always have some red, you know, some green, you know, peacock curl. And they're colorful, but they imitate something. They're great. I think a humpy is very similar to that, like a red humpy or a yellow humpy. The hackle is just big and bushy, and that means that they don't get as waterlogged as quick. And then the dubbing at the bottom, you know, it's either red or yellow. I've seen some green ones. I've even seen some black ones. But that's a pattern that works well. Yeah, so try something like that.
Two others would be the spruce moth, and use that in the West. I mean, I've used that while fishing on
days. And by the way, we're not stupid. We know that that's an imitation of a spruce moth. But
Right.
That's a great attractor pattern.
It is a great attractor. It sits high in the water. Yep. And on days in which we're catching a lot of fish on hoppers, and you go, well, I'm just going to switch it up and put on a spruce moth, it's like the action doesn't change.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing. So, and, you know, I usually will use a 14. I don't think I've ever used a 12, but usually a 14, maybe a 16, but a 14, size 14. So, yes, it's an imitation, but really a great attractor. It's like a large caddis. And then, you know, in Colorado, there's what's called the H&L variant, which is it's one of these rapid water flies or fast water flies. Sits really high. It's got these wings that stand out almost like a royal wolf.
Yeah, I was going to say it looks a lot like a royal wolf, only there's no red or green.
And it's and one thing nice is it's great for these streams that have these stretches of rapids. And it's amazing. You catch fish in those rapids, you know, they're not always sitting in there, but certainly in the summertime. So the H&L variant and the spruce moth would be two additional ones.
You know, there's an old pattern that's, I think, making a comeback a little bit. It's the Renegade. This is one of Ernest Hemingway's favorite patterns, and the fly fisher that introduced me to it was a park ranger in Rocky Mountain National Park named Jerry Williams, and he would make a killing on these flies, and they can still work. So the Renegade has white hackle on the front, brown hackle on the back, and that the hackle faces in different directions. The thing about it is you can even fish it like a wet fly. Maybe sometimes my frustration with the Renegade has been that it doesn't float as high and dry as a Royal Wolf or an H&L variant, but for that reason, it can be effective when it's submerged. I know a Montana fly fisher, Arlen, who makes a killing with this. I mean, he uses it on the Boulder River, you know, south of Big Timber, Montana, and he just slays the fish. He's a good fly fisher anyway, but man, you give him a Renegade, and he'll produce fish. So that might be one to think about if you want something that could also function as a wet fly.
Another is the Stimulator, and these come in different colors as well. You have some red on there. You can have some, you know,
yellow. Orange.
Orange. Yeah, orange, they come actually in different colors, right? So, but a Stimulator, and so they sit high in the water. They look...
They're a little longer, aren't they?
Longer. Mm-hmm. They kind of look awkward.
Yeah, they do.
But your brother Dave swears by it. I fished with your brother, and he will doggedly, one, he fishes dry flies all the time.
Yes,
so
he does.
When I'm not catching anything on a dry fly, I'll switch to a dry with a dropper, or go to nymphs, or fish a streamer. He does not. He just is so, and consequently, he catches just a ton of fish on dry flies. But a Stimulator is something that he must have, you know, a boatload of those in his box.
I think
he uses them all the time, especially in Rocky Mountain National Park and in the West. Yeah.
Yep.
So the Stimulator is, you know, have a few of them in your fly box. Mm-hmm.
You know, another pattern that doesn't get a lot of press, but if you're fishing somewhere where there's stone flies, especially golden stone flies, would be a Madam X. And I've used these in Highlight Reservoir before above Bozeman when I lived there. I know a fishing guide that used to use these exclusively on the Yellowstone with new clients. People who hadn't fly fished much, he would just take them out and they'd drift a Madam X down. And I think because it would imitate a hopper, it would imitate a golden stonefly. That's another one to keep in mind. I think we could have added a fifth category, speaking of stoneflies. So you got mayflies, caddisflies, terrestrials, and then attractor patterns. I suppose we could have talked about stoneflies. And that would include salmon flies. Those hatch in June in Montana. It's always tricky because sometimes rivers are blown out by then, but that can be good. You've got golden stone flies. You've got little brown stone flies. Often, though, these aren't as prolific throughout the whole summer. their window. So that's why we haven't talked about them. Just so you're aware, we're aware too that this is another category to pay attention to.
Finally, I think we talked about these different categories, and we haven't talked a lot about size, and we've done this probably ad nauseum on some of our other podcasts since we've been, how many podcasts?
Yeah, this is 270. Like number 270. Yeah, this is 270.
Yeah, hey. So we've talked about different types of flies. We've written about it on our website as well, but you know, size is really important.
Oh, it does, man. It matters.
And you know, I have to say that since we've moved to the Midwest, size is even more important on those smaller spring creeks. So I never use anything smaller than a size or bigger than a size 18. And I just don't. But, you know, we have some 14s for the West, you know, some of the bigger, especially for the attractor patterns. I remember, who was it that legendary fly fisher who would get the biggest elk hair caddis that he could get and float it down the Yellowstone?
Yeah,
I don't know if it
I'm
was.
Not sure.
I forget his name, but he'd just get the biggest.
Wasn't Joe Brooks or Lefty Cray?
Who was that guy? Well, he had a shop in West Yellowstone.
Oh, Bud Lilly.
Yeah, I think it was Lilly would do that. He would just get, and of course he would tie his own. So he would, like a size 12. Or a size 10, and just let that, and he would catch these big browns of that thing.
Yeah.
So, but size is certainly important, and so where you fish matters, and the size of stream, and what they fish, time of year, etc. So,
what would be your all around size, Dave?
So for me, again, I would say for me, it's always an 18. I never go bigger than that.
And I'm the same way. Yeah,
I just don't.
I mean, I've caught fish on 14s or even 12s, but wow, it seems like there's more times where if they hit a 14, they'll probably hit an 18.
Yes.
But there are a lot of times where they'll hit an 18, but they're not going to hit a 14. They're looking for something smaller.
And I realize that are eating to survive, so they're always looking for the biggest morsel with the least amount of effort, right? And but given that, I just, in general, if we're going to try to keep it simple, in general, I just, small always typically beats larger for me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And there are times where trout won't hit an 18, but they'll take a 20.
Yeah.
And I know there are times when they won't take a 20, they'll take a 22, and like, see you later.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not going there.
I'm done.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
I'm going to eat.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, now to wrap this up, Dave, if you were limited to three patterns, and we'll say, okay, they could be, they could be different sizes, but three patterns, dry fly patterns, and you're going to go a day on whatever river or even a week on whatever river, you only have three patterns to take, what would they be?
So one would definitely be the purple haze. It's just one of my favorite flies. Second would be the elk hair caddis. And the third would be some version of the film star, which is, you can do it as a BWO pattern or a PMD based on the color. I do think you need to have something lighter. So I would say purple haze, elk hair caddis, and film star. I do a light version of the film star for the PMD.
Wow, that's good. Man, great minds think alike, or simplistic minds think alike. Actually, my first one is a little bit different. I'm going to go with the parachute Adams, which,
goodness.
Basically, the purple haze.
You are old school. How old are you now?
Yeah. Same age as you, Dave.
Oh, Lord. Goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it. All right, so parachute Adams, and then, of course, the elk hair caddis. And then this final one, I mean, this is a hard one because I really wanted to add a hopper. How can you not add a hopper? Except, and this goes back to the point you made a few moments ago, if you have a big enough elk hair caddis, you can catch fish during hopper season on that. That could be mistaken for a hopper pattern. So I'm going to go with Craig Matthews Sparkle Dun, which is basically what you said as well. I'm just being more newfangled. You called me old school a moment ago. You're just going to go with an old PMD pattern. Now I'm going to use the Sparkle Dun, although that's been around a little while too. So
there you have it.
Yeah, that's it. But I'll say this, even if you're not limited to three patterns, don't make it too complicated. Honestly, Dave, there are days we've fished, we've only used a couple dry fly patterns.
Totally.
At least me. You're much better at trying new things. I get lazy and like I'm just determined I'm going to catch something on this parachute Adams.
But at the end of the day, often when we fish, what's really amazing is that I catch two, you catch three. I catch four, you catch three. It's not you catch 15 and I catch one.
No,
or two.
No.
And we approach the stream differently in terms of fly fishing, but it's amazing how often we're pretty much at the same
number of fish. Oh, we are. And just to round that out, Dave, you make it sound like we hardly ever catch fish. Well, that's true in the Driftless, but yeah, if we're in the West, you know, I catch 14, you catch 15, or you get 27, I get 26. We've had a few days like that.
And the last few years have been really good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they have. Yeah, they really have. Yep. Yeah, don't make it too complicated. That's all we're saying. A couple patterns in each of the four categories is sufficient. So grab your favorite dry fly patterns and head for the river while the days are still long and the weather is still warm. All right, that's all for today. Thanks again for listening. I'm Steve Mathewson.
And I'm Dave Getz.
Until next time, we are two guys in a river.
For the love of fly fishing.